Stay home and chill, keeping you company during the coronavirus.
Yo, this is Michael Payne, and I host the Michael and Marcel Show on FUBAR Radio every Wednesday from 4 till 6 p.m. Thanks for staying at home. The only thing we want you to catch is a vibe. You're listening to Stay Home and Chill on FUBAR Radio, keeping you company through the coronavirus.
Dan Clark on FUBAR Radio.
Thank you for joining us, Simon Day.
No problem at all.
I'm a big fan of Brian Pern. They were kind of like one-offs, weren't they? Or two-parters?
We did sort of three sort of series in various lengths of time, you know, half hours. And some were 40 minutes.
You and Rhys Thomas.
Tribute, yeah. Well, it's Rhys Thomas, really, with me in it, you know.
Yeah. And how did that come about? Did he just ask you, or did you chat about it?
We were talking about stuff and sending each other little films, as people do. And he said, have you seen... And we're big Peter Gabriel fans. And
me too, by the way.
Yeah, and he sent me this film of Peter Gabriel, who appeared to be very reluctantly talking to his fans. You know, he would always have a huge sort of tour set behind him. And, mm-hmm. and it really felt like they'd gone, you've got to, you know, talk to your fans, what people do now, Peter. And he'd go, hello... It's me here. As you can see, we've just got some problems. We're in Copenhagen. And it was all... And he really is not a person who likes to be in front of a camera.
Yeah.
He's a genius songwriter and performer. But that's just not his thing, and as it shouldn't be, you know. And Rhys just said, look, this is really funny. You could do that. He got me back to his house and we started doing it. And I was really unconvinced that there was any mileage in it. I just said, yeah, but he's quite dull the way he speaks.
Well, you know? I was going to say that the impression is really good. But it's such a niche impression. You couldn't go on BBC One at 9 o'clock, you know, going, guess who this is? Everyone would be like, who the fuck?
Do you keep Peter Gabriel? Yeah,
Ronnie Corbett, Peter Gabriel.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's good. Yeah. It's really accurate because he speaks in that weird hushed tone. But you've actually got the strange staccato intonation thing.
Yeah, it's like he's got indigestion. So we said no. Very hard. Rhys, genius that he is, he just completely, no, we're going to do this, and drove it. And it just grew and grew and grew and grew. And I sort of wanted it to be more, very much like the BBC documentaries on BBC Four, quite dull. And he was like, no, let's make it really funny. And he made it a lot funnier and more stupid. And
at the beginning, it was much more closer to the career he had, right?
Yeah.
And then you started branching out and having him do like Britpop or... I was rewatching some... this stuff yesterday, but just like the stuff where you have him singing the world music stuff. I wonder if it's because I'm a huge Peter Gabriel fan. I've actually seen Rhys at Peter Gabriel shows.
Yeah.
But I wonder if it's because I know that detail, because there was a thing about where you're playing music with gorillas.
Yeah.
And Peter Gabriel actually
no,
did that.
Done that.
I mean, that's funny anyway, if you know that anyway.
Well, yeah, I think people who know, they send stuff and say, look, this is Peter Gabriel. I mean, the bottom line is the industry really like it, and Rhys got so many, because Rhys is really good at getting people to be in it. He writes to them. The people that turned out, who came down to London for sort of 200 quid, you know, Roy Wood, and one day we had Baughty Spice, Roy Wood, Chrissy Hind, and they're all coming in and out, these people, and you've got to sort of say, we're not taking the mickey out of you, and Rhys is really good
at all
that.
Sounds like Band-Aid.
It was like Band-Aid. You know, loads of people came and passed through the show, and then... You had sort of Michael Kitchen doing John Farrow, which I think he should have won something for that. It was just such a brilliant... I watched one the other night with a lot of him talking.
Yeah.
And he's so brilliant in it. Kind of held it all up. It was good for me because I was kind of like the straight man. And I kept saying, well, I don't want any lines. And we just go, don't worry. It's just you reacting in the awkwardness, you know, of Peter Gabriel. You imagine what... He doesn't really want to be with lots of people.
Yeah, I mean, it is funny, though, because there's something about how serious he's taking everything. Like, when he goes... into the is it like caves or something and you're like, you know, it's just this
I met him. It was terrifying meeting him, because I always thought he would be short, and my logic was he was very handsome on the front cover of So incredibly handsome. I thought he's gonna be one of these little handsome blokes with a big head. And then Rhys,
do you mean ego or literally big head?
No, I mean a big head, like, you know, you get the sort of the Dustin Hoffman model of famous actors. And Rhys wrote to him and said, you know, we were big fans, and I don't know if you've seen this thing we've done. Or he actually came out online and said, someone's taking a mickey at me, but it's okay, blah, blah. Went to see the show and then met him backstage at halftime. In fact, he said, Peter's ready to meet you now. And he's sort of taller than me.
Really?
And I was just really sort of embarrassed. I didn't know what to say.
You're a tall man as well.
Yeah, he's my size. I just felt a bit embarrassed. I think I dropped my crisps. You know what I mean?
The worst thing you could have done.
Yeah, they were beef and onion as well.
You're showing your class there with your beef and onion crisps. They're definitely my least favourite, I'm afraid.
No, I don't eat beef and onion. No. It's disgusting.
Okay. I would be quite nervous to meet him anyway, but let alone having kind of mocked, not mocked, but...
Well, we are, you, I'm know, sure you are mocking him because you're doing stuff, the stuff in there and... Ooh, I think he was like, oh, I'm surprised anyone's interested in me anymore. But
oh, Peter.
But he's a really nice guy.
Yeah.
And he got it and he was very funny. Although, this is a showbiz anecdote. This doesn't happen very often. We were having dinner with Peter Gabriel and the bloke out of Queen, the drummer, Roger.
Yeah.
And we're talking about Brian Pern and Reese goes, yeah, but he loves it. And me and Eric Clapton both said this at the same time. Yeah, but he has to. Do you know what I mean? Because you can't go, it's rubbish. You know what I mean? Because people have obviously gone, have you seen this? His family and people who know him.
Yeah, because he would just look like a right grump if he said anything else, of course.
Exactly.
Harriet Rose on FUBAR Radio.
We have Ray in the studio.
Hi.
Hi, Ray.
That was so straight in. That was just like, let's go.
In this game, Tom's going to kick it off with reading the first lyric. Don't look at my paper.
Okay, no, I'm not looking. I can't and then, see. That's but afterwards, tiny.
I know. I was like, don't look. Yeah, you definitely can't see from over there.
No.
We're going to play the little clips as well afterwards so you can hear what it would sound like in real life. But we're definitely going to read it in a very non-fun way.
Oh, great. Okay.
Want to come around here like a bad boy? Do it. Bun all the talking. Go
Stormzy.
On then. Do it.
Big few
beats. Yay!
Yay!
Woo!
1 point to me.
Go on and do it. You were in his music video.
Yeah.
How fun is that? I was so excited by that music video. It was so power.
It was really powerful fire.
Women standing around being cool.
I made a really big mistake on that day though because for some reason Storms was like, right, come through. It's all black. A blue coat.
Dude, though, it was really cool because when I watched it, I was like, oh, you just look like the star of the show because you've got a blue coat on. That's a legit thing. That's exactly what I would have deliberately done in that situation.
I felt really bad, but they were actually like, yeah, keep it on, actually.
No, because it looked sick.
Yeah. Plus, it was Adidas, so that was good vibe.
All in, it works with the Stormzy vibe.
There you go.
He's a cool guy, right?
Oh, my gosh, one of my favourite people.
He's one of my favourite people, too.
We're currently playing Words of Friends. Absolutely... rinsing me. It's quite embarrassing.
Is he using the two-letter words? That's
no,
what I used to
no.
Do.
He does the two-letter words and actually makes another word with it. Like, he just got, like, a 40-point word. He's out here.
I need to do that because, as a presenter, I need to start learning how to say words because I struggle.
Yo, there are so many words. I didn't even know this. I'm quite trial and error, so I'll just drop a few things. I'm like, that's a word?
That's exactly what I do. Yeah.
This is songwriting 101 with Ray. Right, shall I do the next one? I'm going to do this in my most solemn voice because I think it's the best way to do it.
Oh, God.
Monday to Sunday, doing it our way. Remy on play. Cheers to the weekday.
After the after party.
Correct! Who's it by?
Charlie XCX.
Who wrote it?
Me with
Let's hear a little bit of that if I can find the button. Monday to Sunday, doing it
our way. My voice is somewhere in the background of that. I got BBs in there.
Ooh. God, woman of many talents you are, aren't you? Just smashing it on all fronts.
Thanks, babe.
Up to you next, Tom.
You're lovely, but it's not for sure that I won't ever change. And though my love is rare, though my love is true.
Oh, my gosh.
A bit Shakespearean with that.
I'm going to give you a hand for that because you read that so well that I didn't have a clue what you were
doing. Can you maybe read it one more time? Can you get a repeat?
I mean... I can. You're lovely, but it's not for sure that I won't ever change. And though my love is rare, though my love is true. The ha-ha is not in there. I just added that. Just added that in.
This is an old school tune. I think this is someone you really like.
Ooh. Oh.
It's a woman. You're
lovely. I mean, that was... But it's
not for sure. Oh. Corey,
why are you doing that?
Wait,
song called?
Oh, yeah.
Wait, keep playing it. Nelly Furtado. Oh my god, I'm such a donut.
I'm like a bird, I wanna fly away.
I don't know when was it. Yeah.
I think you put everyone off with that
clip. I was like, what is this,
a
eagle?
Girl?
I was like playing charades with you in a separate sort of like state of mind.
How did I not know that?
No, because that
I don't know the verses very well. I love the chorus.
To be fair, it is from the year 2000.
Yeah.
Like Busted.
Now 42.
Okay, final one.
Okay.
This is for the win. This is another old school one. So think old school.
Okay.
Oh.
Oh, God.
Oh, I'm overdue. Give me some room. I'm coming through. Paid my dues in the mood. Me and my girl's gonna shake the room.
Oh, no.
Just think of it really slowed down.
Do you know what? It's and so
the first O is, oh!
That's quite a good O.
Oh! So I'll do it again. No, oh!
I'm in the mood.
Oh, I'm overdue.
I'm overdue.
Give me some room. I'm coming through. Paid my dues. In the mood. Me and the girl's gonna shake the room.
Crotchless chaps.
Gonna get rowdy. Gonna get a little more something.
Gonna get the... Christina... I would never have got Christina Aguilera. Yeah.
Can I get a little red? Dada! Yes, indeed.
Oh my gosh, someone's spoken.
Give us some room, coming through.
Yeah, I wouldn't have got that.
Hard.
Very hard.
But you still won because you got two.
Thanks.
And in this game, you always win. And do you know what Beyonce's little child says to that?
Good job, B.
Good job.
Is that Blue Ivy?
Yeah. She recorded it for us.
She did.
She did not. That's a lie. But she would, I'm sure.
Hugh Joseph and Michael Payne on FUBAR Radio.
We've had some big guests today, haven't we?
But we always save the best for last.
None other. TV star, theatre actor, all-round absolute legend, Matthew Horne joining us in the studio.
Good afternoon.
What's up, man?
Did you say you've had the director of Cowspiracy in?
Yeah.
I loved that doc.
I love it. So good, huh?
It was so good. No, I loved that.
Did it change your life as much as it's changed yous?
And my shoes.
Well, Cowspiracy.
Yeah.
Well, has it changed your life? Are you not eating cows?
I was already vegetarian. I'm going to go vegan now. I had to watch it this morning.
I know. Well, this is incredible.
It's a tough one, isn't it?
It is a tough one. The last email I received before I walked into the studio was a reminder to renew my TV license. But that was counteracted with seeing the most incredible sausage roll on Twitter. Someone posted a picture of the most insane sausage roll.
Which
obviously you will not be interested in.
I'm interested in looking at it. Trust me, I want that thing in and around my mouth, but I won't.
Well, it's a sausage roll, not a beef roll. It seems to me that all Cowspiracy is about beef.
Mm. The pigs still drink the water, though. The pigs still drink the water.
Mm. I was in Brighton on Monday and went to this little veggie cafe, and they had like incredible list of veggie and replacement of meat meals that I'd ever seen in my life. When I went vegetarian, one of the biggest things I missed was like the hoisin duck pancakes, crispy duck,
sure.
Little cucumber and a little spring onion, and you roll them up yourself, and it's fun and it's delicious. They had a vegetarian version of that, fake duck. It's called fuck.
Or was it not just a cucumber?
It wasn't just a cucumber.
Is that true or is that just a setup for the joke?
100% true.
It's called fuck.
Well, no, it should be, but it was definitely a fake meat-free
duck. That is a brilliant idea.
Fuck. It was delicious as well.
Gotta get me some fuck, man.
Yeah, I've got it. If you go into a cafe and ask for two fucks, I wonder how much it would cost.
Fucked in the mouth as well.
Yeah, lunch was pretty expensive. It was £180 just for lunch. I got fucked in the mouth twice.
Oh, I'm absolutely full of fuck here. This is what an afternoon. What a long lunch.
But that's all about problem-solving, right? What do I figure out what I eat? We were just chatting about before we went on air about being an actor. Got to be a problem solver.
I think so. I mean, that's part of it. I see it as problem solving. So you're presented with a line or a character, which is a challenge, and it's about how you resolve that challenge and become that person or deliver that line in the appropriate way.
How much do you think you've sort of matured? Because obviously the first time I ever saw you on TV screens was in Gavin and Stacey.
Oh, man.
Right.
Which I'm still a huge fan of.
Yeah.
Shit never gets old. How much do you think you've matured as a thespian from then
I've
now?
Definitely matured in the sense of I've got older. Yeah. But I have been an actor for 16 years now professionally. So, I mean, mathematically speaking, and I know this is your bag, I have 100% matured. It's always been my thing to hopefully develop and get better. Whether that's true or not, that's not for me to say. But I always like, you know, sort of comparing myself to other people, which you should never do. I always like those actors that when you first become aware of them, they're quite shit. And then they get really good over time. rather than those actors who you just see and they're like, oh, I'm brilliant, and they'll just be that brilliant forever. It's much more interesting to watch a person grow.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd put an actor like Leonardo DiCaprio in the latter. He's always been brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, I think I first saw him when he was What's Eating Gilbert Grape, and he was incredible.
Imagine,
and he's
the
still incredible now. I mean, it's not to say that I don't like him for that reason. I think he's an amazing actor, but I do like those actors. Obviously, we're not going to name any names, that you just think, well, you've got something.
You weren't,
but then, start like 10 years later, wow, you're amazing. Like, yeah. I kind of like that.
Daniel Radcliffe?
Who's that? Actually, I've just been nominated. This isn't a boast in any way, trust me. Let me get to the end. I've just been nominated for Best Actor at the National Film Awards.
Congratulations.
Wow. And in my category, it was for a film called Breaking the Bank, which was a movie that was out for just under 24 hours a couple of years ago. I don't quite know how I've got this nomination, but let me take you through the people that are in my category. Daniel Radcliffe, Eddie Redmayne, Sacha Baron Cohen, Ewan McGregor, and Shia LaBeouf. I don't know what you guys think, but I think it's in the bag.
Well, look, Matt, look, it is a heavy lineup. That's a heavy lineup. But, mate,
I mean, I've heard of some of them.
But at the same token, like, mate, we don't often get people on the show and not at least really announce more things about them than their name. We were like, nah, it's fuck. Put the paper down. It's Matthew Horne. It's all we need to say. We don't need to say, oh, you remember him from. No, you fucking better know. You better know.
You better know Matthew Horne.
So you deserve to be in that, mate.
You know, I'm surprised because it was public vote. And that film was seen by, it was seen by an audience, and sure, obviously, both of them enjoyed it.
Why the 24
hours? Two for
hours?
One night?
Four
it was
hours,
like,
just
oh,
a
that,
very
that's
short
all,
space of time.
That film I did is on tomorrow, and then, well, I won't see it tomorrow. I won't go and watch it tomorrow. I'll go and watch it on Sunday, and then by the time it got to Sunday, it's gone. But so I don't know how that's happened, but it is, nonetheless. It's
that's a massive achievement, nonetheless.
Huge. Oh, wow, yeah, I mean, yeah, I'm thrilled a bit.
So do you reckon you can get plus two for the award ceremony, and me and Hugh can...
I mean, you guys, you will be absolutely more than welcome.
Well,
I don't
maybe
know, I don't
we
know
can
where
do...
it's taking place. Put it at Mackie D's in Croydon or something.
Maybe we can do like a Marlon Brando-esque thing and you can send me... When you win, you can send me to politely decline the award.
That would be good.
In your
just say
place.
There are other people on this list who are more deserving.
Yeah. No, not even that. I'd say Matthew can't accept this award because he wants to make a stand. We could make it like a Cowspiracy thing.
Maybe. Fake duck.
Yeah, there you go. A stand against fake duck.
Yeah, poor fake ducks.
No, I only just found out that you're allowed to swear. Isn't it brilliant?
You can. Did you want to have a little shot? Because not many people get an opportunity on it.
No,
sure,
but
you
brought it really in early.
I'm sure, done lots and lots of radio interviews. And how many of those have you sworn on?
None.
Matthew Horne, we are about to break your radio swearing cherry. We're going to give you 30 seconds of profanity.
It's not my style
to swear. It's not
attractive
when it's on a plate, is it?
Can you just do one?
Tit wank.
That's pretty good.
That's my favourite one, to be fair.
Tit wank was a good...
Casual is this concert. Show eligible for the radio awards?
It is. We're up against Daniel Radcliffe, Eddie Redmayne.
No, we're up against Howard Stern.
Andrew Marr.
Steve Lamacq.
It's in the bag after the tit wank.
Joey Page on FUBAR Radio.
It's now time to welcome my first guest of the afternoon and somebody that I'm very excited to talk to, not only because of what he's done in his career so far, but also what he's bringing to the table with his new work. Of course, talking about Tom Fleming, formerly of Wild Beasts, now going under the moniker of One True Pairing. So welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you.
How's it going?
Really, really good. Really well, thank you. Yeah, it's nice to be here.
Also, I should say, full disclaimer at the beginning of this chat, you're my first interview that I've done in about 6 weeks.
Brilliant.
And so who knows how this is, not as in how it's going to go, but do you know what I mean? I'm a bit out of practice. So feel free to pull me up by the bootstraps if you need.
It's been a while since I spoke to people. I'm just starting to sort of speak to people about stuff again as well, about me.
About this, yeah.
Honest, yeah, rather than like, you know, the job advisor.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's quite nice.
Is there anything you've started doing recently that you never used to do and now you do it almost on a regular basis?
I actually joined up as part of the Extinction Rebellion thing. So
oh, have you?
Yeah, so I'm kind of, I mean, my partners are more heavily involved than I am, but I've kind of been like going to protests and I've been kind of like, I'm trying to do some of the organisation and stuff. I mean, I'm only involved in a very baby way, but it's like,
yeah,
but,
right.
But yeah, just it's something that I can do. It's essentially a fight against the kind of like grand impotence we all find ourselves in. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
right.
Because there's all sorts of stuff kicking off, and none of us can do anything about it. So it's like a small step towards trying to do something about
yeah.
it. I'm sorry, that's not very lighthearted.
No, it's fine. But also in my household, because I live with my wife and her sister, mm-hmm. and she's very heavily into like environmental change mm-hmm. and stuff, mm-hmm. which on you know on the face of it is great. But when you come home and you find out that some of the household budget has gone on 300 rolls of bamboo toilet paper because it's better for the environment. But you're like, how much does that cost?
It's like £17,000. Yeah, yeah.
Someone's making jewellery out of... this literally happened. My sister-in-law made some jewellery out of mud and twigs.
Doesn't sound expensive.
No, but that's just like lying around on the windowsill. And I'm like, come on, let's get rid of this. What's going on? So, on the face of it, yeah. And then, but when in practice, sometimes you're like,
in practice, there are challenges.
Yeah, yeah.
There are challenges.
But that's mainly vanity from my vanity and wallet problems. Also, I don't know why I've got this in my head, but I was just on the internet. You know, you've just got to kill a bit of time.
Yeah, and you go down an internet hole.
Yeah, and yeah. I was looking at some statues, like bad statues that had been made and things like that, and I saw this weird sketch, the fact that I was watching it. James Corden basically had a statue of David Beckham made, but really badly, and it was like one really elaborate big hoax, and then when they unveiled it, it like, didn't look anything like him. He had a massive chin. It was just like a big, like, Beatles about kind of wind-up. And so you got me thinking about statues.
Uh-huh.
And if you was to become a statue, like there was going to be one made in your image, what would you like it to represent? We've already taken a picture of the pose.
Yeah, it's kind of, I was thinking of the kind of, is it Heroes or Bowie does the kind of like, the weird like taekwondo thing, whatever he's doing. The statue that had the biggest effect on me when I was a kid was, I don't know if you've ever been to Coventry Cathedral. And there's a picture of a... I should know which saint this is, but I don't. Vanquishing the Devil. And the devil is very controversial when it was unveiled, because the devil is hung like a horse. Like huge new devil.
Are you about to say that you want your statue to be you hung like a horse?
Well,
that's what you want to represent.
It would, the artist would have to be kind, but I've never considered that anyone might want to build a statue of me. So I used to live in Upper Clapton in Hackney, and there was Clapton Pound Plus I used to visit a lot. If they could put a statue of me outside of that, you know, and the various kind of like broken light bulbs I used to buy, that would be a very touching tribute.
That's actually perfect. That's exactly the kind of thing I'm after. So yeah, good answer. And finally, I yesterday had a sort of a personal milestone in my career as a stand-up comedian. I got to support Harry Hill.
Oh wow.
And I've met him a couple of times at just gigs where he's been trying out new material, but it was like the first time I got to spend any like a real amount of time around him. And because he was such like a big influence on me becoming a comedian, I just didn't really know what to talk to him about for a lot of it. So and I just wondered, in your career so far, is there anyone that's like really got you, like have you ever been starstruck by anybody?
I have. Normally what the technique is to just list how many times you've seen them. I saw you here, and I saw you here, and there was this one time where like I saw you here, and that was different. That was slightly different because he did that this time and not that. And it's like, and eventually you just realise you're just talking and you're just expelling carbon dioxide, and bless them, they're trying to be nice, but they're just like,
right.
And that's kind of fine. That's like, I'm kind of all right with that. I think when it crosses over into like when you're trying to be someone's mate and they're kind of like, this was nice, this is now the end of the interaction.
Yeah, right.
Do you know what I mean? And when you can't take that hint, that, I mean, I've definitely been guilty of that.
And is there someone that you...
I was certainly a Michael Gira of Swans was a big influence on me. I've met him a few times and just like made a complete... tit myself.
Yeah, right.
He was very, you know, very generous and everything, but still made a fool of myself.
It's almost worse when people are generous, because it forces you, well, it doesn't force you, but you think, oh yeah, I can keep going at this. We'll be best friends by the end of the
afternoon.
It's a false
sense of security, isn't it? Yeah. They're handing you the rope to hang yourself with.
Yeah, yeah. Well, listen, man, thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, pleasure's all mine.
Yeah, it's been brilliant.
Tom Latcham on FIBA Radio.
Joining us on the line now is Sharon Horgan and Rob Delaney, both of whom wrote and star in Catastrophe. How did you come up with the idea, guys?
We both have human babies and are married to other adults, and both of those things are challenging, and they both make us laugh a lot, and so we wanted to see if we could capture that sort of situation on a TV screen,
We wanted to make sort of romantic comedy that had a real bite to it as well. So these people, the characters in the show, they really like each other, but we throw them into the deep end of a relationship immediately. She gets pregnant, there's all sorts of crap that comes their way, and we just like the idea of seeing people sort of really battle to kind of continue to like each other while we throw a bunch of catastrophes at them.
And is it based on real life experiences?
It's based on your life.
How do you know? Oh, really?
And we're going to need you to dial it up. It hasn't been that interesting the last 2 weeks.
Rob, why did you want to make a show for a British audience? I mean, obviously, you're huge on Twitter. You've got a big following in America, certainly. Why did you decide that you wanted to make this show for British TV?
I was over here doing stand-up, and so then the opportunity arose for me to write a script for Channel 4, and I took it and asked Sharon if she wanted to do it with me because I wanted the show to be good. I knew if I did it by myself, no one would care because it would be garbage. Or rubbish, as I believe you say. That's an Italian.
That's exactly how you say
the word rubbish out of a British guy. And I'm so glad it is now, because here in the UK, you get to write every episode together. In the US, we would have had a writer's room with 13 people in it. Not that that doesn't produce good shows, but I'm a despot and I'm not a nice person. And I can barely share credit with one person, let alone 13.
Yeah, so, I mean, the thing about Channel 4 is there's not that many channels in the world that do what they do and who would let you just do what you want, really. I mean, apart from giving us great sort of guidance along the way, they really just let us go for it. That's a tricky thing to get anywhere, especially in the US.
Well, in the first episode, you say the word cunt 3 times.
Oh, you just said it.
Yeah,
oh, my God.
It's fine. This is FUBAR Radio. We are the home of uncensored radio. Mike. Exactly.
FUBAR indeed.
Frankly, dropping the C-bomb on FUBAR is nothing. You know, it's like the least worrying thing we do. It is risque in that sense. You do say the word cunt 3 times in the first episode. Did you have to get an okay? I know at BBC, for instance, the C-word has to be signed off by the number 2 in the BBC. Did you have to get a sign-off from someone high up in Channel 4? Or did they just say, nah, go for it. Use it as many times as you want.
You take it to the head cunt, and then they...
then they make you sign why you want to write it with a number 2.
No, you have to have a reason for all of it. I mean, it sounds dull, but actually it makes you write better, I think. I love language like that. I think a fuck is a great sentence enhancer. I think the right place for all sorts of words. I think you should be made to explain yourself. Sometimes you go through our scripts, we'd sort of go, no, we need a sort of fuck sort of clearance of, a fuck sweep. And we take a few out, because I think if they're unnecessary, then you kind of think, well, that's just lazy.
We're editing an episode right now where I just watched a scene and I was like, that's enough F word.
Yeah, I know the thing you mean as well. So too many.
We'll take a few out and we'll stick them up your arse.
I don't know what accent that was. Talking about fucking, there was quite a few sex scenes as well in it. How was that to film? Was it embarrassing or you don't mind?
Well, it was not that embarrassing because we were doing a little sort of porno on the side. So we'd just come from something much worse. No, well, it was fine.
My genitals were horribly damaged by a dog a few months ago, so I'm really no sort of threat. So it's just they more pity me. So Sharon was like, is this okay? Are you all right? And I'd cry, and they would edit out the tears with CGI.
In what way were your genitals damaged by a dog, Rob?
Just they're not really there anymore. It's just sort of like, before you cook hamburger, have you ever made hamburger at home where you grind up meat yourself?
Just being a prick, really.
If you had a real child between you, what qualities would you most like it to have from you and least like it to have?
Oh, jeez. I mean, I tend to be a bit of an anxious person. I would hate my kid to have any of my dreadful anxiety. Also, my feet aren't great.
What about you, Rob?
They're all right. I mean, yes, they're misshapen, but once you get sort of used to looking at them, you don't look at them and think, what are those? I mean, you know their feet, even though they're sort of, yeah. If I could not pass on abject alcoholism, that would be great.
Yeah,
I would really be thrilled if I could not pass that one on. And then what would I like them to have? I mean, I think obviously my smile.
Rob, I read an interview with you where you said that it wasn't very real, because if you got someone pregnant in the UK, you'd drop them like a stone. That's real.
No, I think I just said that to be mean. I mean, I'm a pretty nice guy. I mean, I'm trying to annoy and upset you, but in real life, if I cared about you, I'd be very kind to you. And if I got you pregnant, if I get you pregnant, I'm going to be nice to you, and you can take that to the bank.
Access all areas on FUBAR Radio.
Well, we have our final guest in the studio with us now. Hello. Nadia Essex, hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good.
You're struggling a little bit.
A little. I'm carrying a lot of extra weight, so.
But you look amazing. Oh, so you're 6 months, aren't you?
Yep, 6 months preggo.
Boy or girl?
boy.
Do you think that you were having a boy?
No, I was convinced I was having a girl. I know it's not PC, but I really wanted a girl.
Really?
Yeah, I was really disappointed when I found out it was a boy.
Oh, no.
Are you happy about it now?
Yeah. Like, you get your head around it and you get used to it and now I'm all excited. But I know girls. Girl problems, I know. Girl issues, growing up as a girl, I know.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of sort of willy stuff that I don't have never had sort of access to that I don't know about.
But you're a dating expert.
Yeah, from grown adults.
Not child.
You know, it's like there's a lot like male boy puberty and all this sort of stuff. You know, it just scared me. But now I'm like, okay, I've just got to get my head around it. Because
you've got no choice. Yeah. You have to.
Yeah, it's happening.
See, I'm the opposite. I would prefer to have a boy story. Because I'm like, the girl issues right now, period, and all that rubbish. I'd rather stay away.
Pregnancy sucks. It does. Being pregnant is a gift. It's fantastic and I'm really appreciative and I know there's so many people out there that wish they could be pregnant and can't be, and I do appreciate that. But my pregnancy has been so tough. I mean,
really?
I've got carpal tunnel syndrome in both of my wrists.
I've got that.
How do you get that? Why do you get that? Because you're...
Because basically you have water retention, so everything kind of swells and it's trapping the nerve in both of my wrists. So
right.
At the moment I can't like wash the dishes, I can't hoover, I can't like, it's a struggle to sort of like wipe my bum.
Wow.
Because you've got to get in there and it's very
difficult. The hand movement just said it all.
Yeah. Right? There's a lot of wrist action and it hurts. So, yeah.
But you are doing some work because you have a new podcast.
I do.
Yeah. Tell us about it.
So it's called The Clueless Mum.
Got it.
Does what it says
on
the tin.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Which is literally me because I have no clue. I'm about to turn 38 years old. I didn't know that I was pregnant until I was nearly 10 weeks because no one talks about it.
Yeah.
Like, nobody really talks about the real proper symptoms of pregnancy. I hadn't had a period for over 2 years because I was on a specific pill where you don't have a period.
I'm on that one.
Yeah.
Great.
So
you just be careful, John.
Yeah. So you don't... Well, you don't know. How would you know? Yeah. Everyone assumes... First thing the doctor was like, when was your last period? And I was like, well, like 2016 or whatever. And he couldn't even... The doctor couldn't work out my due date. So my doctor said I was 7 weeks. And the midwife was like, no, you're nearly 10. Because it's all around periods. And I was like, Mr. GP, you gave me these pills. Can you educate yourself, please? Because I didn't know and I was so poorly.
So I'm guessing all this is what you talk about on the podcast.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much just like the cluelessness of my situation.
Do you interview other people, other mums or...?
Not yet. It's kind of, there's a lot to get through and I'm a talker. So at the moment, it's kind of just been me just chatting about all of the things that have happened. Because it's just mind-blowing, you know. Who knew that you could get carpal tunnel syndrome through pregnancy? And, you know, I'm getting the
I certainly did not know that.
Yeah.
And everyone says that when the baby's born, it will go. But the doctor's like, there's nothing that can be done at all. You just literally have to grin and bear it.
Are you nervous about the birth?
I mean, you have to push a baby out of vagina. It's...
I've heard these rumours.
Yeah.
Yeah, these rumours are, in fact, true.
True.
It's not something that I'm looking forward to, but I'm reading a lot of books to try and... Again, no one talks about it.
They say not to read books, apparently, about birth. Apparently so, because apparently it actually scares you.
No.
You may as well just literally sit there, wait for your waters to break and boom.
No, honestly, I couldn't... That is the worst possible advice I would ever give.
Really?
Of course. Because it's really traumatic. Like, what happens to your body is trauma.
Yeah.
And if you don't know... I'd rather know what is going to happen. I'd rather know what a sweep is and what they do to induce you and how many fingers are stuck in your vagina to get things moving and how and the infections and the things that can happen, but also the way that you turn all of it into a positive.
Yeah.
And you write a really positive birthing plan and you have a plan that may not go to plan, but it's something that you don't go into it dreading.
Yeah.
you know, preparation is key in anything. Like, if you were getting married, you wouldn't go into the wedding and be like, oh, I'll just turn up.
Yeah.
You know, it'll be fine. Mm-hmm. You plan. And it might rain and it might go...
Preparation is key.
Yeah, it might go wrong. But, so yeah, no, don't... Look, people give you such bad advice when you're pregnant.
So, wow. Joanna, don't go around telling people that.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm literally like, don't read books, just get on with it. But actually, in reality, how do you up the feeding and things like that? Mm-hmm. I've always thought that, like, when do you start giving them actual, like, harder food?
Exactly.
Well, that's just, yeah, I mean, read a book. I think that is the time you need to read a book and find out when these things happen.
But it's like, it's the craziest thing to me, because all these changes are happening to my body, which I talk about all on the podcast. You know, there's a lot of, like, real talk.
Yeah.
But no one talks about it. And I'm like, why don't we talk about this in schools?
It's true.
If women stopped giving birth, we would die off as a species. Fact. So why on earth...
Typical man reaction, laughing.
But it's true. So why on earth are we not, like, talking about this to young girls?
It's true.
So they know... So that it doesn't become this scary thing.
Yeah,
so,
you know, true.
I'm reading the book now going, oh, my God, I can't do it, because I'm just learning about this now. But if I'd learned about all this in school,
you're prepared
I'd
yourself.
Probably be, yeah, I'd be fine by now.
Are you still dating through pregnancy? I've heard a rumour that you are.
I mean, I'm single, of course. Like, it's a really weird subject that people have very opposing opinions on and very strong opinions, which I find really weird. But some people are very opposed. They think that when you get pregnant, you all of a sudden, you are no longer woman. You don't exist. You are an incubator for this human. And this human comes first, and you, all of you, your mental health, everything about you becomes secondary. Mm. And I'm like, nah, honey, no, like, I come first.
Yeah.
Like, I still exist. I'm more than just an oven.
So you're still dating at the moment, then, I'm guessing.
You always have the opportunity to date, if it's there.
Hugh Joseph and Michael Payne on Fubar Radio.
And we are joined now, comedy superstar Ron Fletcher!
Yay!
How you doing, man?
Good.
Have you been to the UK?
I've never been.
I wondered if this might have been your first time.
It's my first time. I've always wanted to come. I'm a big fan of Beatrix Potter.
Beatrix Potter.
Yeah, I'm a big old pothead. I love her. I love her so much. Yeah. And so I just wanted to come. I was going on a vacation on a holiday. And
so how long do you plan to stay for?
I'm going
to
be here for about 11 days. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to go to Amsterdam and Copenhagen.
Going
to
do some rolling there as
I'm
well.
I'm going to do a lot of rolling.
Do you think you're going to judge people, though? You're going to walk into a coffee shop in Amsterdam and order a zoot and then be like, fucking roll that myself. That was terrible. Are you going to get a judgy?
No, I never get judgy. I mean, I've been to Amsterdam once.
Okay.
And that's my favorite thing about it, that it's so not judgy at all. There's no one judging anybody on anything.
I don't even think they got judges over in Amsterdam.
I don't. You got a court.
The court's like, it's cool. Yeah. Like,
roll that joint.
You did what? Just get stoned, bro. You did what? You robbed someone?
You need a time out. Take this split and sit in that cell for a bit. Don't come out until you finish it.
I like that.
That'd be a great judicial system, actually.
Yeah.
That would be. I actually think that's pretty close to how they do it over there. I don't think that's too far.
Get into the Hague. Smoke this joint.
Yeah. Are you sorry now?
Yeah. I didn't remember what I did.
You've been killing it over in the States.
Go through the list.
Couple of the shows. Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon.
Been on that.
Conan O'Brien.
I know Conan.
Also on Undateable as well.
Undateable. So it's a show that's cancelled now.
Oh. Why? What happened?
Basically, I lost a bunch of weight, and they were like, you're not undateable anymore. We gotta shut this show down.
Yeah.
So that's what they did.
That is the worst reason to get a job, like, curtailed. Like,
no, I mean, I'm lying. I'm lying. They were like, not enough people are watching.
Yeah. But voiceovers as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, really, I'm a big fan of BoJack Horseman.
Yeah.
You know, I've got friends who love Bob's Burgers as well. How did you sort of get into the voiceover
role? I mean, I don't know.
You have a very distinctive voice.
So the same thing that people were making fun of me when I was in middle school and high school, now I get checks for. So that's great. They were like, your voice is unique and weird and you're funny, so come in. And
great.
They were all shows that I was a big fan of Bob's Burgers, big fan of BoJack.
Yeah. Oh my God, this is what I wanted to ask you. I'm actually please. Now,
I like how you got excited.
All right. So I'm actually now talking to someone who does voiceovers. What comes first, the animation or the voices?
Ooh, okay. Rough animation comes first.
Right.
And then you do the voices to that, and then they go back and do another pass and kind of do it towards what you were doing.
Okay, from the horse's mouth. No pun intended.
So is it really laborious doing voiceover stuff like that?
No, it's like really fun.
Is it really?
It's at least for me, because I'm not a guy going there and going like, hey, I got 100 different voices. Like, it's just like, this is the voice you get, and you can make it faster, we can make it slower, but that's it. And so for me, it's just usually going in and playing around for about an hour, and then they give me like $1,000. It's great.
Amazing.
It's great. It's amazing.
Amazing.
Yeah, man. It's amazing. So it's a great job.
When did all this start kicking off for you and like steamroll quite quickly? What happened? Tell us about the process.
I started comedy in Portland, Oregon in the States, and I have a son, and I was like, I need to focus and buckle down. And my son also has autism. And I was like, I better get some money. I was like, I need a career. And the only thing that I was interested in was comedy. And so I was like, either go to college and focus on a goal I don't even really want, or I need to buckle down and just focus on the thing that I think I can be good at. And so here we are, coming up on 10 years later, and I'm in London talking to you guys.
For real. It's a pleasure as well. It's really such a pleasure.
So when you're doing, like, say, going from doing that, I mean, you have done a lot of TV, but then going into roles, big feature films like Get Hard. How did you feel going on set and being a part of that? Were you like super confident and just chilled and hanging out? Or were you shitting yourself and going, fuck, how did this happen?
Mostly the latter. Mostly the shitting myself. Yeah. I was just terrified because these were people, I mean, Will Ferrell, Kevin Hart, guys like that were people I like just loved growing up watching.
Yeah.
And so to be on set with them, and I just remember I'm just joking around on set when they're not rolling, and then I hear Will Ferrell laughing at some joke I made, and I'm just like, okay, all right. This means that I'm okay. I can do it because I'm making Will Ferrell laugh.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so then once that started happening, I just relaxed and was like, they hired me for a reason, so just do that. And it was a really great experience. I'm working on a movie with Bruce Willis.
Wow.
And then upcoming Trolls movie that Justin Timberlake was in, and I'm in a Justin Timberlake music video. He smells so good.
What does he actually smell like?
Yeah. He smells like sweet, but a little spicy, and then a lot of money. He smells
like money.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine?
A lot of confidence.
But doesn't the money smells like cocaine, doesn't it? Like if you, I love the smell of cocaine. I don't take it, but God, I
just
smell it for
you
hours.
Just getting near to it.
Yeah. Amazing.
Callum McSwiggan.
Callum McSwiggan.
On FUBAR Radio.
I have the beautiful Mawan Rizwan. How are you doing?
All right. I'm doing good, man. How are you?
I'm really good. It's amazing to have you here.
Thanks, man.
I feel like we go way back. Well, back a few years.
YouTube days. Yeah.
You're not doing the whole YouTube anymore.
No.
You're like a fully established comedian.
I'm not about that 1080p life anymore, man.
You've moved on.
Well, it's not just that, right? I mean, I still upload videos on YouTube as a way of making stuff and, you know, having creative autonomy, because you just upload whatever you want, right?
And no one can police that.
Yeah. But I think if you're a YouTuber and you do it regularly, then you kind of have to like be okay with loads of people looking into your life. And
yeah,
I don't know if I wanted to make vlogs and, you know,
there's something about putting yourself on YouTube that makes people kind of go, okay, I have access to this person now. I want to know all the personal details about them.
Yeah.
Whereas I feel like if you're on stage, people come to see your show, they love it, they applaud, hopefully, and then they leave, and they're not going to be like, okay, so what's he had for breakfast?
Yeah, exactly. And it's fine to have both experiences, you know, but I want to live in the real life more. I'm spending too much time on my screen anyway.
Yeah.
I don't need to be uploading every other day. And then, you know,
this may be a slightly controversial question, but what do you think of the term people of color itself? Because I've seen a lot of kind of debate over this.
I don't know. You tell me what's the latest. I feel like it changes every day.
You're asking me.
I don't know. I don't know, man. Call me anything. Just don't call me non-white.
Sure. Yeah.
Apart from that, I'm like, whatever. I mean, I had to like people of color. I think at some point I had to learn that's what you say.
Even you didn't know.
Yeah,
I feel like it's more of an umbrella term, and I've heard certain people saying, you know, don't describe me as a person of color. Really, if you're going to talk about who I am, like talk about who I am, talk about my heritage, talk about where I'm from. Don't just kind of lump me under this big umbrella, because that is okay. such a diverse umbrella. That, yeah, that I want so many different people.
I want you to call me Pakistani-born but Essex-raised Moan Rizwan. Thank
okay,
you
is that,
very much.
That your full name? Every yeah. time I refer to you.
Every time you refer to me.
During the show, okay.
Also, Leo. I'm a Leo, and if you can mention that, that would be really great.
not a fan of Leo. I was going to
no?
be honest with you.
Why?
No,
just attention seekers.
Attention seekers, a lot of aggression.
What?
I mean, even in this
room. You saw
room
the way
right
I slapped
now.
You. That was not aggressive. If
but
anything,
you did it. You did it.
I did it.
Like,
yeah.
if you were sat over there like a Capricorn, you wouldn't have hit me at all.
Hold on a minute. How are you the victim in this situation?
turn it on me. Classic white boy, you know.
Yeah,
it's
all about you, isn't it? Oh, you're so woke. I like that. Thank you, Callum.
Oh, you are very welcome. I think this will tie in quite nicely. I'm really interested in knowing who your LGBT plus icons are. Like, who do you look at? Whether they're historical, whether it's now, who do you look up to? I already know one of the answers, which is why I'm asking you now.
Yeah, I mean, you've just played Mickey Blanco, and then before that, Janelle Monáe. So I
which wasn't set up deliberately. No, I did not know you were going to say those two
now
people.
Now it also sounds like I'm just like, the last two people I've heard. But I generally think they're great and the rap game needs more queer people, right? But I think my true gay icons, and from a young age, were Timon and Pumbaa.
Okay.
Because if you think about it, right?
Right.
Timon and Pumbaa.
I'm ready for this, yeah.
Yeah. They were Disney's first ever gay couple.
Were they, though? I don't mean to doubt it.
Look, I'll get
Moan
my representation where I can get it, okay?
Moan gave me the dirtiest look when I questioned that.
Beggars can't be choosers. I was a kid. I needed any representation possible.
Yeah, okay, I feel
you.
And
they were funny, and they were... I mean, look, think about it. They're proof that gay adoption works.
Yeah, I mean, look at Simba. What? Like, they yeah. raised him right.
They raised a kid who went on to become king. Of what? Of Pride Rock. Come on.
Pride Rock.
Harriet Rose on FUBAR Radio.
Shoop, Push It, Let's Talk About Sex. Some of my favourite songs in the whole world. I am absolutely honoured to have Cheryl, aka Salt, on the line of Salt and Pepper. How's it going?
I am great. How are you?
I'm so, so excited to have you on the show. You have no idea. I'm a huge, huge fan of yours. And I think for me, as a person who's loved you since I was so young, you were a real inspiration for me. One of the main reasons I got such a love for hip hop at such a young age. And I feel as a woman, you influenced me massively, and you influenced so many females, artists, people who just love the music, people who wanted to become musicians. Would you guys consider yourselves as feminists, or was it just something natural that came from the Salt and Pepper movement?
Yeah, you know, I think that the success of most groups, whether you like them or not, when they're successful, something happens, right? Like a ceiling, a glass ceiling was broken, and they spoke to the masses in a way, even if it wasn't you that group. I respect groups that make it, because I'm like, even if I don't like their music or particularly have a fondness for their music, I know that there's a formula, you know, there's something that happened, and part of it is what you told me, you know, I shaped your life, I inspired you, I changed your life some kind of way by what I was doing or what I was saying. And I think that comes from not planning. I don't think you can plan that. I think that's just authenticity. Salt and Pepper brought fun fashion and femininity to hip hop. And I think we were always real about everything that we did, everything we wore, everything we said. And people get around us even to this day. That whole icon thing for me is like, I have to have an out-of-body experience to even appreciate that word. I have to step away from myself and look at it like you would look at it and say, oh wow, that is pretty damn iconic. You know what we accomplished. That happens through the fans when they come to the show, their Kente hats and their Push It jackets that they made and their Salt and Pepper t-shirts, and they're in their 90s garb. I'm just like, wow, that tells me how much what we did really, really impacted people's lives. And I love it. It makes it almost like a ministry to me. I love hearing that. I can't hear that kind of stuff enough, how I positively impacted your life.
Ian Boldsworth on FUBAR Radio.
So we're joined now by Levi Roots. Is it Levi? It is Levi.
It is, yes. Yeah, okay. Levi. Yeah, Levi. Levi. Levi Roots, if you want to be French with it.
A friend of mine recently was talking to me about you, and he said that your name is Keith. in real life. Is that true?
He's winding you up. He's joking.
I just going to punch him in the mouth.
No, I'm honestly not trying to. I swear I'm not trying to do that.
I think someone's having you on,
though. Is that not true?
Well, it is one of the most shamefulest part of Dragons Den. It was Theo, wasn't it? It was Theo that...
I don't know. It was him.
His rumble. After I was doing so good, you know, the song and everything was like... I slayed them all. They were bloody dead in the Dragons when I came in with the song. And then Theo was the guy that said, Levi Roots, is that your real name? And I'd made a plan before I got this, and I'm not going to bloody tell him that my bloody name is Keith.
Yeah.
And when he said that, I had to admit it, that it was it. And I thought everything was going to go down the bloody... But down the pan.
Why did that matter?
Well, because, you know, I didn't fancy when I was quite younger, when I was trying to find my way in, and I was thinking, I want to be a singer on stage.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't think of anybody introducing... Ladies and gentlemen, introducing the fabulous, the wonderful Keith.
Well, no. Why did it matter to them? To the Dragons. Why was that important?
Because the branding, isn't it? Right. Because these guys are all about branding. They couldn't think of a bloody brand called Keith.
Yeah. But you're selling reggae. Yeah, but you've already addressed that by being Levi Roots.
But it was a shock to them to find out that there was somebody else in there, you know.
So as my friend deliberately made me say something that's out of order.
Yes, because I normally punch anybody in the mouth that calls me Keith.
Well, I can tell you who to punch if you want. Yeah. I think we should get Levi to the point where he wants to punch several people in the map, and then we just let him loose. We just let him back into society.
Yeah.
And just keep an eye on, like, teletext or whatever, if that's still a real thing.
Sort of.
Internet is called now, isn't it?
The internet. The Google.
So, forgive me, I never saw Dragons Den. I had a friend who used to always sing your song, and then I saw your products on the shelves. I was like, okay, so that's the guy. So he's from Dragons Den, and I put it all together that way. But I don't really like programs like that.
Yeah, well, I didn't either. I never saw Dragons Den until I was on there.
Okay, yeah.
How did you end up getting on there?
Well, I was harting around my song around the country for a couple of years and just decided that I didn't want to sell ice to the Eskimos. So I decided that I'm not going to go anywhere there are black people to sell it there, because they know jerk sauce. They know Caribbean food. So
is that why you've come to Fubar today?
Well, what we did with the kids, we just looked at the map and says that anywhere there's a shire at the end of a road in the country, that's where we would go.
Okay.
So I was in one of these shire type places.
Right.
And I had a tap on the shoulder from one of the production team from Dragons Den, and of which she asked me would I like to be on the show. But of course I never watched it, never even heard of it, but I did think it was I'm a Celebrity. Get me out of here. And I sort of said to her that I'm completely not interested. There's no way you're gonna get me to be eating kangaroo testicles on your program and things like that. And she said, no, Levi, it's not about that, it's about business and enterprise. And I said, well, I don't know anything about bloody business or whatever. She said, that'd be great for the sauce, take my business card, and if somebody does tell you about Dragons Den or whatever, then do give us a call.
Okay.
That was it.
Yeah.
Mark Dolan on FUBAR Radio.
With us on the line now is a marvellous broadcaster, the host of I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here Now, where you're not allowed to have Aussie hair care products, of course, because it's the jungle. Laura, welcome to FUBAR.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Listen, really well. Great to have you on the show. Tell us about Mo Sisters. How can the sisters support the brothers with the hair growth? What exactly is expected? Because as we know, physiologically, it's a little tricky to grow a beard.
Well, you know what? For some women, probably not so much. But
I didn't want to say. I was steering well away from that one, but I'll let you say that.
Just go. We're always told to wax. This is the month where you don't have to. No, honestly, I think a lot of people know that November for the past few years has become Movember. And you see, I'm like Talia, I like a hairy man. So I totally agree with you on that.
It has changed, like, our society, hasn't it? Because I think Movember has basically created the hipster somehow.
Yeah, there's something quite... Well, as you were saying, you were talking to Talia there earlier on. There is something about, I think, men like an excuse to grow a tash. And even men who say, like yourself, the fairer men. Like, you know, you can start a few weeks beforehand and not tell anyone else. And just,
that's what
you
I've been
know.
Doing, yeah.
Is that what you've been doing?
Yes, I've also been on a quite intense steroid treatment. And the problem is the hair is going in all the wrong places. It's quite... I mean, if I'm honest, I don't want to... It's a strong image, but when I'm not clothed, it's like a freak show. But do you know what? You got to try.
That's an image that I'm never really going to get rid of. But thanks for sharing.
So, and is there not?
I don't know if what we're even talking about now. I just have such a visual going on.
It is. If I'm honest, I've clearly ruined your day, Laura, and for that I apologise. Producer Talia, what do you think about this whole hairy thing?
I'm going to do
a photo of the hair on the moustache and hashtag moustache because I like that.
You know which moustache you're going to do because we did a photo shoot and we did lots of different moustaches. There's the Dali moustache, there's the Einstein moustache, there's so many different options. So have a little think about what you're doing because okay, cool. You can have some fun.
It's a brilliant idea. I know Ozzy have really got thrown into the spirit of this. We've got Handlebar, yeah. Zorro, yeah. Fu Manchu.
That's a great one.
Access all areas on FUBAR Radio.
AJ Bentley, hello.
Hello.
How are you?
Oh, I'm very well. Thank you.
Thanks so much for coming in.
It's good you're here. You've been on tour. It feels like for years.
It feels like years for me. Yeah, it's just, I don't think it's hit me yet because obviously I've been on tour for about 2 years. So I was in the band musical. So I was on BBC Let It Shine a couple of years ago.
Which I went to the press launch of and I loved it.
Oh, thank you.
Well.
So I won that show alongside four other guys. And then we.
What was that like? I mean, how can you start from the beginning? Why did you enter and how did it all come about?
It was Gary Barlow for me. Mm. I've always been a massive
Gary Barlow.
Gary Barlow.
Just been a massive Take That fan, being a massive Gary Barlow fan. My mum sent me the link and was like, what do you think? And I was like, yeah, what, just give it a go. And I went for it and just kept making it through the rounds, kept feeling like I loved it even more and didn't want to leave. And then, luckily... I didn't have to. 2 years later, yeah.
How incredible.
It's been a journey.
Was that your first experience in...
Yeah, I was training contemporary dance in London for two... I was in my third year of uni. So at the time, I was about to go and do my dissertation.
Did you bend that off?
I won the show. So it was the case of if I hadn't have won the show, I'd have had to go back on Monday and finish my dissertation. So I got out of that.
The worst part of university is writing the dissertation.
I remember.
I had the good 2 years, yeah.
Oh, how incredible.
Yeah, I mean, you're in a bit of a bubble when you're in it and you think all of your competition are just way better than you are and you don't think you have a chance. And obviously everyone from the outside say, oh, you've got such a good chance. You're a great group. We think you can do it. And so you just got to believe it and just go with it.
I want to ask how you cope with the nerves.
I think for my very first audition, that was the first time that I'd ever performed on a stage on my own. That for me was the worst. I actually enjoyed the live shows. I really enjoyed it. I think maybe the first live show was a bit nerve-wracking. From then on, I just enjoyed it. And I don't think I ever thought about the millions of people at home. I think I just focused on the audience.
Best thing to do.
Like Gary Barlow and Danny Minogue and Amber Riley and Martin Kemp. And I think having them four look at you and judging your performance, I think that's your first and foremost worry.
Terrifying.
Before you worry about the people at home.
So, of course.
So, yeah, I think.
So what was the show like doing it on stage?
The band, the music has been so good. I never expected to have the reaction that we got. I think, you know, obviously we're going on stage and we're singing Take That songs every night. Not in a tribute band sort of way, but in, you know, the story's the core of the musical. But it was always a worry that, you know, Take That fans maybe wouldn't have liked us singing Take That songs. Mm. So it was good for us that they were well received. And yeah, it was just the reaction that we got was just amazing. And obviously we accumulated a following of supporters throughout the 2 years. So we obviously thank them for, you know, returning and coming back and supporting us. So, yeah.
And that's allowed you to do your own music now.
Yeah, someone's going to buy my music. So that's good. That helps. Other than my mum. So yeah.
What made you want to do that? Because it's risky, isn't it?
Yeah, it's risky and it's different. And I think at the time, you know, you're in a musical and you're sticking to this schedule. Mm. And I just wanted to do my own thing. I wanted to have something that was out of that bubble, that was creative away from what I was doing. I think it was just about having that bit of creative energy in me that just had to just burst out and just wanted to be productive.
But it's grueling at that many shows a week. That is hardcore. I mean, I did a musical, nothing like this, but it was West End. But I found it just took over my life. There was nothing else because you just get to the theatre, do the show, you'd be chatted, matinees, and it's hard.
It becomes your life, and obviously you're living out of a suitcase and you're moving around every week or two, so you never really get a base. You know, we were in the West End for about 6 weeks, so that was the most of a base we had, I guess, for the 2 years. But yeah, it's been an amazing couple of years. And just way beyond my initial expectations from when I entered the show. So, I'm only going to look back with fond memories now.
And Gary Barlow, you love him even more. Is there a picture on your wall?
Oh, maybe not on my wall anymore.
Dan Clark on FUBAR Radio.
The wonderful actor, comedian, writer, and ex-carpenter?
Scaffolder. I'll take carpenter.
Yeah?
It's a hell of a trade, carpentry. I've had some done at my house recently. It's a really good trade.
First of all, I should sort of just make sure everyone knows who I'm talking to and that I'm not actually talking to a scaffolder who wishes he was an actor, writer, comedian.
Yeah. Illusions of grandeur.
I have with me Tom Davis.
What's your favourite musical?
Hairspray.
which we get onto now. Well, yeah. There's a segue for I wasn't going to ask you yet, but you got
that. No, it's my favourite musical. I think it's amazing.
You're talking about the original, John Waters one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Ricky Lake. I watched it. When we talk about Your Lowest Ebb, I watched that story of Tracy Turnblad and was massively inspired.
I went to the cinema to see Hairspray.
Really?
Not on purpose.
Right. Date?
Kind of. Right. I was stood in the queue to go and see, I think, Three Men and a Baby.
How old are you?
I just turned 40.
Oh, happy, happy yeah. 40. Thank you. Great. You actually were really good for it.
Oil of Ole.
I generally remember watching your show, and you actually haven't aged a day.
Oh.
You could go and play a 21-year-old. I could play a 21-year-old when I was 13.
Yeah.
I looked about 40.
Oh, well, look, this has absolutely made my day. So we can wrap up now. I'm going to go and get a few pints. I was stood in a queue to go, I think it was Three Men and a Baby or Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. A film like that, a bit, I was going to say, you know, like a man's film, like Three Men
and a Little Lady, that infamous action movie.
And me and my mate, I met some girls in the queue. They were going to see Hairspray. He was really confident, this friend of mine. We were like 11, I think. We were 11. And he chatted them up and we went and watched Hairspray and French Kissed in the back row. First time
ever. And your friend or you?
Yeah, we were like, come on, like this, girls. Look, we'll show you how you do
it.
I mean, we were watching a John Waters film, it was the first time I ever kissed a girl properly.
Wow.
With tongues. So I don't really remember an awful lot about Hairspray, other than it is incredibly camp and full of bright colour and sort of a
bit. It's one of those films, I think, if you look at it principally as just going, it's very camp. I watch it and I don't think it's got an amazing storyline in it. I always just think it's sort of her quest to do what she wants to do. It sort of breaks down barriers. I find it inspiring.
When did you? How old were you when you first saw it?
Probably about 28, 27, 28. And I think it was on Film 4 of an afternoon.
Did you just say of an afternoon?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I didn't know people still say that.
Yeah, I mean, I've
you're quite old school, aren't you?
This is me. This, what you get when you like put me in this scenario is me trying to talk well.
Stay home and chill, keeping you company during the coronavirus.